podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket and our look back at the fourth day's play in the first Liverpool Victoria Insurance Test. That's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? Between England and New Zealand from Lords, of course, the third day completely washed out, so very little chance of a decisive result, I suppose. There's just one day left and England 165 behind, New Zealand two down in their second innings. And actually, Simon, we didn't do a podcast yesterday, inevitably. It must have been quite a boring day for you, actually. And oddly, a whole day washed out, which is pretty rare, isn't it now?
Yeah, well, you think about the Lord's drainage and yeah, everyone says, oh, yeah, as soon as it stops raining, we better get underway fairly soon. Drainage is good at Lord's, but of course, it never stopped raining, even after they called it off. Well, it did stop after they called it off, but then it started raining again. So I think the umpires made the right decision. It's a really frustrating day because the match, I mean, would be fascinating. If this were 3 days in, with still 2 days to go, then New Zealand would have a great chance of winning the match. But there'd still be so much intriguing cricket still to come. But unfortunately, the players have been, and the spectators as well, have been denied by the rain on the third day. It does happen from time to time. We've seen test matches at Lord's affected by the weather in recent years. The Australia Ashes test match and the India test match before that, they both had days knocked out. So it's actually not that unusual. You think of London being sort of drier and warmer. I think it probably is generally, but unfortunately, put some stumps in the ground and down comes the rain. And actually, the forecast for tomorrow is a suggestion there might be one or two showers around on the final day. But I mean, it was a really interesting day today and a triumph for Rory Burns in the way it was a triumph for Devon Conway on the first 2 days. I mean, he dragged himself through Burns. I mean, he did have some luck, Yoz. By no means an unblemished 100. It was an unblemished double 100. But for Burns, he needed some help from the umpires and he needed some help from the New Zealand fielders as well.
And he needed some help from the physio, didn't he? Because he had at least two clangs on the head and had to change his helmet. And that's what I worry about with him a bit, and I know you shouldn't judge everyone on how they're going to go in Australia, but I do worry about that because he's a compulsive hooker, and the Aussies bounced him out in the Ashes series of 2019 a couple of times. I just think he doesn't play that shot very well, and he gets clanked on the head really quite too often for an opening batsman. But you know, credit to him, you know, he absolutely grafted, you know, grounded out, didn't give it away. Picked up his runs, was quite fluent actually towards the end. And I mean, England were very thankful for him too, because if he hadn't made that 100, they would be following on, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, every chance that they would have been in a position to follow on, or New Zealand to enforce the follow on. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, the game is a game of such fine margins. We know that. I mean, international sport generally is, you know, in all sorts of sports, those fine margins. But three times he was hit on the pad. Three times New Zealand went up for the LBW shout, and three times it was umpire's call. So if he'd been given out, he would have been on his way. You know, he wouldn't have been able to overturn it. And a couple of those were earlier in his innings. One certainly was very early in his innings that he got away with.
It's just these millimetres, isn't it? Millimetres. Yeah. And, you know, if the umpire's call goes your way, i.e. the umpire's decision goes your way and the technology backs it up, I mean, it's your lucky day, which I suppose it was today. But you feel, for a guy like that, that he deserves the bits of luck because he gets so stuck in.
Yeah, it's also really bad miss stumping by BJ Watling on 77. I mean, though any self-respecting wicketkeeper, not just test level, but county level, even you know second level, and even you know good league cricket level, you'd expect to take that stumping. And BJ Watling, I mean, was furious with himself. And Burns was also you know dropped in the 80s as well at second slip, a catch that really should have been taken. It was a tough old innings from Burns. Yeah, you had to give him tremendous credit for battling it out. out. And, you know, there were a few England players today that, you know, swished and nicked and, you know, and didn't show a great deal of solidity, but Burns did. He was dropped in the winter, of course. He had a bit to prove. And, I mean, what you mentioned his fluency in the latter part of his innings. It actually just shows the shots he's got and the shots he's capable of playing. You know, he really did rein himself in, but he got into the 90s. And then he saw Jimmy Anderson coming in. He realised, you know, well, hold on. Jimmy can hold up an end, as he did. But if I don't, you know, be a bit more proactive here, then I'm going to perhaps miss out on 100. And it really opened the way for him. He played several sparkling strokes. He really did. It was a sort of magnificent sort of latter part of his innings, and a really, really gritty 100, which, you know, inevitably will give him a great deal of confidence and, you know, maintain his place in the side for the foreseeable future as well, because he was dropped in the winter. So the good thing for him is that he was in good form going into the Test match. He has made runs for Surrey, and, you know, that always helps. It helps the confidence, doesn't it, going into a game. But, you know, one of those LBWs have gone against him, especially the early one, then, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about Rory Burns at all now, would we?
No, we would be probably talking about England up against it. Let's have a quick look at the who's winning graphic for today, just to see what the state of the game is. If you're watching this on video, obviously you'll be able to see this, but I'll describe it anyway. So we've had a day or two, obviously with the loss of the third day, there was probably less chance. The draw was always going to be edging towards the most likely outcome, and we've seen that really develop today. There was just a little hint for England around about the start of play when there was a hint of opportunity for New Zealand, actually, around about the start of play today, when they took Root's wicket early on, the first ball of the day, of course, and then some fairly loose batting by Dan Lawrence, Ollie Pope, really, and obviously James Bracey, sadly, gave the New Zealanders a sniff of a chance of forcing victory if they could make England follow on. That was at about mid-morning. And they were up to 28% chance of victory. England, 3% chance of victory at that point. But really, ever since then, with the Burns dedication and also actually some good batting from Molly Robinson, the New Zealand's hopes of victory have really much declined. And the draw is now looking at like 90%. A possibility. So all is probably in vain for both teams to get a positive outcome out of it. I mean, just talking about the England batting, those sort of rather sad dismissals, I mean, does alarm me slightly when you see Dan Lawrence, you know, having a massive drive at about his second or third ball, and the way he tried to play it as well. I've got a bat here, and instead of going with the swing and sort of opening the face, he has a tendency to turn the blade over like a topspin. And I know a lot of modern players like to play that sort of topspin off drive, but if the ball is swinging away, it gets you into trouble, as it did to Zach Crawley as well. So a loose drive from him, and James Bracey looked all at sea, really. Good bit of bowling by Tim Southee, but he did leave a gate, you know, as wide as a barn door in the end, which the ball snaked through for a rather unfortunate duck for Bracey on his test debut. And I just actually, when I look at batsmen getting out like that, I then compare it with some of the New Zealand batsmen and the tightness of their technique. Tom Latham, obviously, Devon Conway, Kenry Nicholls, you know, they play, Kane Williamson, they play the ball so close to their body. They don't get drawn into those big, expansive drives. They absolutely sell their wicket dearly. There's an economy of movement, an efficiency of movement about the way they defend. I was looking at Henry Nicholls' stats today about his innings, and he batted something like 42 balls before he got into double figures, and he hit his first boundary on his 75th ball. And he just totally dedicated himself to supporting Conway in that New Zealand first innings. And that is the fundamental root of why New Zealand are so good, because they bat in partnerships, they don't take risks, they defend really close to their body. And I had quite an interesting conversation with, on the wet day, the third day, I was in the box in the grandstand with Mike Brearley, actually, and also funnily enough, the New Zealand ambassador, who's a man called Bede Corrie. And we were talking about how is it that New Zealand are always punched so much above their weight? And he was going, well, it's partly the sort of underdog thing that they've a population of 5 million, which is pretty much the lowest of any test playing country. So they always sort of rise to the underdog status. But also, we mentioned batsmen like Martin Crowe. Martin Crowe was the prince of New Zealand batting until Kane Williamson came on and had the best record, had the most test hundreds and so on by a Kiwi. And I mean, he just had a fantastic, simple method, played the ball right under his nose. I often tell the story about bowling to Martin Crowe. Even your best ball, he just stunned it 2 yards and snuck a single, because he was able to play the ball so late that the ball went nowhere and he could get a single off your best ball. And it's exasperating. And obviously he had so many beautiful shots as well. But I think he's laid a legacy for this sort of economy of movement that the New Zealand batsmen show, and a dedication to the crease and an orthodox defence, which Devon Conway also showed, even though he's not a Kiwi by birth. He's kind of, you know, almost seemed to have gained by almost osmosis the methods that they use. And I think there's a great lesson there to be learnt for those young England batsmen by the way that the Kiwis bat.
So just a bit flirty as far as England are concerned in that middle order, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, and top order as well. Crawley giving it away, Lawrence giving it away, Bracey being undone by, I mean, it was essentially a straight ball, wasn't it? And that was a bit.
It was from round the wicket. It swung in.
It was a little bit.
Quite nicely bowled. Well, I mean, what he did, Southie, was he went round the wicket and he just shaped a couple away from the left-hander first, like that, sort of using the slope, and then he swung one in against the slope through the gate. So it was clever bowling, but the gate was very large.
Yeah. I mean, you know, bowlers at international level are allowed to swing a couple away and then duck one back in. I mean, you know, anyway, it's
first. So the best batting, apart from Rory Burns, was Ollie Robinson today. Who, well, I thought he showed good, simple method, actually, and did extremely well. What a game he's had, with excellent bowling in the second innings, 2 wickets, got Conway out finally, bowled off the inside edge, and then got Williamson as well. So it's been quite a game for him on the field.
Yeah, well, and off it as well. 140 for six he came in at, and you thought New Zealand got a great chance. They could enforce the follow-on, but that 50 partnership with Burns snuffed that out and you know, gave Burns some longevity as well at the other end, and increased England's confidence, and they got up to a relatively decent score in the end, and you know, restricted New Zealand's lead. Now, Ollie Robinson, again, he bowled really well. He's had an excellent match, as you say. He's taken 6 wickets and he's made 42. He's got the chance to add to that on the final day with ball. Who knows, possibly with bat, although England will be hoping he doesn't get to bat on the final day, because that would suggest that New Zealand have made inroads into England's batting again. What do they do with Ollie Robinson now? I mean, that's the question. Is he going to be suspended for the next test match? Is he going to be taken out of the squad? You would think that there was going to be some sort of sanction against him. And you could argue as well that if the ECB, I mean, this is quite a sort of strong view, really, if the ECB are serious about, racism and sexism, and they could have taken him out of this game. And I understand it, you know, there were some discussions behind the scene about the possibility of doing that, taking him out of the game and sending out a really strong message, because it would have done, wouldn't it? I mean, it would have been unprecedented. And it would have been a heck of a decision to make. And people say, well, you know, that would have penalised the other 10 players. But is the stand that the ECB are trying to take, and they did take a stand at the start of the game, the players, they all lined up in a show of unity at the start of the match, is that more important than winning? And so that is a stand they could have taken during the game. They could have taken Ollie Robinson out of the match, and you know, it would be a tough decision, and people can argue, well, it was 9 years ago, eight, nine years ago.
Well, I would argue that.
Yeah. Well, okay, and I perfectly understand that. He was 18 or 19 at the time. You're allowed to vote at 18. You can get married at 18. You can drive at 18. You are responsible for your actions. And you know, I mean, this is taking it a bit further, but you know, if you, I'm not saying he committed a crime, but if you did commit a crime at 18 and you were found out at 27, you would still be punished for that crime. But what the point I'm making is that you are responsible for your actions. And it is hugely embarrassing for the ECB that they didn't, you know, go back into his social media and have a look back, because, you know, there is that, you know, responsibility, and they talk about equality and diversity and all those sorts of things, and yet you have a situation here where, you know, it's hugely embarrassing, and those tweets are quite shameful, actually. They really are. And when he put them out there, and he, you know, stood up after the first day and apologized for them. So anyway, so that's one thing they could have done. If they, you know, that would have been a really tough stance, and it would have really sent a message to all young players that, you know, we are serious about this. And it really would have, I mean, it would have been a tough stance, but what a line in the sand it would have drawn. Anyway, they didn't do that. It's something they could have done. What do they do now? Clearly, he does, on, you know, his performance in this match, he deserves to have another test match. You know, he's played superbly. I wouldn't say. And I, you know, I've actually never spoken to him. I'm just going on what I've seen on Twitter, and, you know, what's happened in this game. But
keyboard warriors. You mean you're being influenced by keyboard warriors?
No, I'm not being influenced by anybody. I'm just saying what I've read. No, I'm just saying what I've read from those tweets that he put out, or you know, those years ago. That's what I'm saying. They are shameful, and so. What the ECB do? Their stand is supposedly a tough one. You know, zero tolerance is what they talk about. So what do they do? I can't see how he plays at Edgbaston, even though with his on field performances, he deserves to play at Edgbaston. So they've got a big decision to make.
Yeah, and I think that they can't win either way. But if it was me, I would say I'd perhaps fine him something. And make a clear statement that, you know, he's being fined for this.
Does that make a clear?
I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's. But I don't see why he should be penalised in such a severe way by missing a test match, which will be a blot on your career to be suspended for a test match for something like that, and for something he did when he was, you know, 9 years ago. When, you know, I'm not in any way condoning what he wrote or tweeted or whatever, but. Things have changed, and, you know, these sort of issues have become much bigger, and social media has become much more inflammatory, and people are investigating it more, and, you know, people delve into what you wrote and deleted 8 or 9 years ago. And I think it's almost condoning the rather sort of scurrilous nature of journalism these days, which is to try and dig up all sorts of, you know, nasty stuff about people when they're suddenly in the public light. Why couldn't someone have dug that up before he was a test match player?
Well,
you know, maybe he could have been banned from a county game or something. It seems very severe to suffer the suspension from a test match for something that he did so long ago, when attitudes to things like this weren't quite as harsh or, you know, kind of... they weren't sort of punishable offences as much then as they are now.
Well, perhaps they should have been. Perhaps they shouldn't be. Should have been then, and we wouldn't be in the situation we are in now, where, sure, you know, where we have a situation where, you know, those tweets, and he acknowledged that he was the one that stood up and apologised after that first day's play. He admitted it himself, and you know, he put those into the public domain. And, you know, he was over the age of 18 at the time. I mean, I take your point that, you know, people change, and I totally accept that. But the ECB have also talked about a zero tolerance policy, so they've got a decision to make about it. Whether they, you know, they just say, oh well, you know, it was 9 years ago, and will there be a bit of a sanction? But, you know, on you go, or whether they actually say, right, I'm sorry, we have to take a stand on this, and someone will have, you know, will have to take the fall. And in this case, it is Ollie Robinson.
Yeah, I think the amount of publicity it's had already is enough of a warning to next generation to make them realise they can't post stuff like that. And, you know, I don't think you need to ban someone or suspend them or whatever to make it clear that this kind of thing is not to be tolerated. I think they're just the kind of apology he's already made, and the embarrassment that's sort of surrounded him for 2 or 3 days is enough to make everybody realise that you can't do it.
Yeah. Well, that is one point of view, and other people have...
But you don't agree with it.
Different point. What I think is this, is that if you're an organisation... This is my point. Is if you're an organisation that says zero tolerance, and you take the stand and say, I'm taking that person out of the game, what a message that sends to everybody. That you really are backing up your words. I think that's the point I'm making. If you talk about zero tolerance, that is a tough stance. I agree. I tell you, it is a tough stance to take. Taking it would be unprecedented to take a player out of the game, and you know. But if those are your words, then that is zero tolerance, isn't it? Taking a player out of the game. That would be zero tolerance. So anyway, and if you think it's harsh, you could argue yes, it is, and I accept it. It is a strong sanction. It would have been a strong sanction. But anyway, they've got a decision to make, haven't they, from here?
Good luck with that.
Yeah, and it's not easy. And, you know, no. Sometimes you need the wisdom of Solomon, don't you, to sort these problems out. It is a really difficult situation, arguments on both sides. And, you know, it's difficult to come to a wise judgment on this. What is the right course of action? And I totally accept that. But I just go back to my point. If you're talking about zero tolerance, then taking him out of the game would have been zero tolerance.
You know, I used to be a coffee addict. Couldn't function without two double-strength lattes in the morning and another to follow, especially if I was going to the gym or on a cycle. It played havoc with my nervous system. Since I've discovered Mission Teas, that's all changed. I feel energised, but not hyperactive. Mission was founded by Tom Whittle on a 9-month ride through South America. His experience was transformed by the amazing properties of Argentinian teas based around the herbs yerba mate and matcha, renowned for their slow release of energy, and rooibos, famous for its anti-inflammatory effects. Mission now produce a range of herbal teas specially designed for hydration, energy boosts, relaxation, and even sleep. Numerous GB sports stars swear by them, including a number of the England cricket team and some famous footballers too. Mission teas are not only genuinely beneficial, but they're actually delicious and don't leave you with stale coffee breath or constantly needing the toilet. Honestly, I feel totally upbeat, whether in the gym, coaching the kids, or recording this podcast, and I'm sleeping better as well. I highly recommend you try some. Mission are offering listeners of this podcast 20% off your first order if you go to missionuk.com and type in the code cricketer20, all one word, at checkout. So that's missionuk.com, use the code cricketer20 and enjoy.
But he's a very good cricketer, and he's had an excellent match, and he bowled superbly tonight, and he batted really well today, and he bowled really well in the first innings, and he's got an excellent county record, and it's a county record that, you know, thrust him into the England side. Yeah. 280 odd wickets now,
21.
First class wickets,
yeah, very, you know, good. Sort of, yeah.
Low 20s. I mean, they are figures that say, pick me.
He looks a Test cricketer. His batting isn't brilliant.
He does,
but he's perfectly respectable, 8 or 9. And England could do with that, really. If you think the bowlers they've had recently, the fast bowlers, apart from Chris Wokes, no one can really bat that well. I mean, Mark Wood is disappointing today, I thought. You know, he keeps talking about wanting to be able to bat and contribute. And I know he works hard on his batting as well. I've seen him, you know, practicing in the nets up in Ashington when we were filming our documentary a month ago, but he can't deliver in the match. And it's a shame, really, because he obviously has ability, but there's this sort of mental blockage when you're a number nine. You know, you get to 20 and you think you're, you know, Kane Williamson and Virat Kohli, and you start trying to play expansive shots and you get out. And, of course, in his case, he tried to play an expansive shot after 3 balls. It's just you don't have the mindset for it. And I think that's something that bowlers are really hampered by. But I think Robinson looks as if he has got the mindset to play an innings and build and you know, accumulate and work out the different tempos and things that are required. And he's got enough shots. So, and he's tall, actually, as well, which I think helps to deal with aggressive fast bowlers or whatever. So, yeah, a great debut. And someone who I think will really give a bit of ballast, with Broad's batting so in decline over the last few years, it will give a bit of ballast to the lower order, which is good.
Yeah. We'll obviously see what happens. We shouldn't finish this podcast, Yoz, without talking about, and we've touched on him a little bit already, Tim Southee. I mean, it's magnificent bowling figures, and you know, tight as well. Six wickets. I mean, he's over 300 wickets in his Test career. I'm sure as a former pace bowler yourself, you can really appreciate.
No, what I love about him is he's like the New Zealand batsman. He's got quite a simple approach, really. And I can demonstrate with this ball here that, you know, his basic outswinger just sort of tilts the seam slightly towards the slips, and that swings nicely away from the right-hander. And then he just changes his grip slightly and moves the seam a tiny bit away from its normal position. So his fingers are now on the leather rather than on the seam, and he bowls it down the same action, and it doesn't swing. It just angles in. And it's called his three-quarter ball because instead of the fingers either side of the seam, the fingers are sort of on three-quarters of the seam. So it doesn't swing, and it just wobbles. The seam wobbles down. It looks like a cross-seam delivery or something. It just wobbles down and goes straight on. And he's been working on his in-swinger to the right-hander as well, which he can now use to the left-hander. So he's developed a few little extra tricks, but basically he runs up and bowls nice full-out swingers. He doesn't mind getting driven occasionally, and he's trying to induce the edge all the time. He goes a little bit wider of the crease occasionally to try and induce the drive. And it's just little subtle variations and a very rhythmical, quite flowing action as well. He's not quick, is he? He's 82, 83 miles an hour. But he just gets that lovely curving shape with the ball, seems to swing it pretty much all day, and keeps going, you know, great stamina. And just great optimism, actually, as a bowler. He's always smiling. He's not one of those grumpy fast bowlers. He's always looking positive.
No.
And, fantastic performance, 300 wickets. And, of course, if they have Trent Bolt for the next test, England's batting work will be even more cut out.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening with Trent Bolt.
He's here. He's here. He was wandering around the outfield.
By now, Yeah. So there we go. Whether he'll play or not, it remains to be seen. Whether he's had enough bowling, whatever conditioning.
Well, I reckon they need to be ready to play next test because
Thursday
he's ready for the World Test Championship final, and I'm looking forward to that actually, as I know you are. Well, just to see those two teams, battle it out for even potentially 6 days. I think you were saying on radio today.
Mm. Well, that's right. It wasn't the most thrilling Friday night. My wife had a friend round. My daughter had a friend round. So there was me just on my own. And so I thought what I would do is delve into the regulations of the World Test Championship and have a look at
You spend a Friday night reading the regulations for the World Test Championship final.
Well, it wasn't the only thing I did on Friday night, but it was one of them because I was slightly intrigued. In what way do we get a sixth day? And I have to say, having read the regulations, I'm still not quite sure. I think because they're not well written. They really aren't very well written. They should be in, for example, in there just so that people can understand it. Anyway, we will be kept up to date by the match referee as the match goes on, so we'll be able to communicate that. But it seems to me, from reading, and I may be completely wrong, that it is possible, say, to have an hour and 15 minutes on the sixth day. So
as long as they pay us for a full day's work, I don't care.
Come back. Well, I know you're going to be there as well. So it's possible to come back for an hour and 15 minutes or an hour and a half or an hour and 5 minutes. I think that it has to be an hour. That's the least we can play on the final day. But anyway, if there's no rain, then we won't have to worry about it. And, you know, a draw's a draw. But if there's significant time lost, then that time that's not made up in the first 5 days will, I think, be carried over to the sixth day. But what we won't have is, it seems to me, unless it's loads of time lost, we won't have a full sixth day. There'll be, you know, a certain amount of time allocated for the final day, the sixth day of the match. You know, it's not quite timeless test. I mean, we have had 6 day test matches. I mean, I remember there's one, I mean, it's going back in the day now, there was definitely one in the 1972 Ashes series, which is when I started they first started watching cricket because that was a decider. So they had 6 days for the Oval Test match between England and Australia, and Australia won the match on the final day and levelled the series, but England held the Ashes because they'd won in Australia the previous time. Of course, you go all those years the back, Open. To timeless Test matches.
1939.
Famous one, 1939, the 10-day game. England needed about 40 to win, but they had to call the game off because...
Yeah, and I think they were chasing about 600 it's amazing. In the last innings as well.
They were chasing a huge score to win. It would have been, an incredible feat if they got there. It's funny, isn't it? Back then, they probably thought 40 to win, that'll probably take about another hour and a half. These days, they'd have knocked it off in about three overs.
I'm just going to give you one little bit of credit. You predicted that Gloucestershire's county championship campaign might falter. I see they've lost by an innings to Leicestershire. Yeah. R.I.P. Gloucester.
Well, they're struggling now, aren't they? I mean, I did say about a couple of weeks ago they'll have to play very badly to mess it up from here, and I think it's fair to say they have played very badly. They've lost two matches by an innings in their last two games, Surrey at the Oval and against Leicestershire as well. Perhaps they've been found out. I don't know, but they'll still be in it going into the last two games against Hampshire and Middlesex, but it's going to be a tall order. It's really starting to concertina at the top of that group too. What we should just is look at the very quickly a word on the final day at Lords. Your who's winning graph says clearly a draw. What could change in that? Well, we've got 98 overs.
What could change?
In fact,
if the ball does what it did tonight and they nick it instead of miss it. England could, I know this, the graphic says England have a 3% chance of victory, but in a way, if the ball really does something and there are a few edges and go to hand and, say England bowl New Zealand out for, 150, they could chase 250 to win. Obviously, if New Zealand get bowled out for 150, that suggests the pitch is playing up, and it certainly is a little bit. So chasing 250 will be tough, but... Yeah, I think all results are still possible, actually. I think the graph is almost a little bit of an illusion, but it looks odds on to be a draw, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you think a draw is a big banker there, but could happen. You're right. The other side of it is New Zealand. New Zealand might get into a position sometime in the afternoon where they can declare and try to embarrass England in, say, 50 overs or something like that, 53 overs. Probably a race against time. If they had a couple of decent spinners, then it might be different. We've said early in the game that. This pitch has not got the spinners it deserves. I mean, the ball has turned, and I think it will turn tomorrow. And if it say be India spinners bowling on the final day, they might well have been able to, or they might cause some problems. But it's going to be Mitchell Santner who is the unlucky man on the stumping, Rory Burns missing out on a wicket. But you'd think draw. But not for want of trying. It's been an interesting test match, hard-working test match. Quite a struggle for the batsmen, actually, and Conway and Burns have been able to triumph. But the bowlers have, the bowlers have sort of...
It's all to do with this. It's that not beautiful Duke's ball.
It's not a belter, is it?
I think it's because it's dry. The ball is gripping and there's a little bit of uneven bounce. Yeah. Now, just a quick date for your diary. Your and my colleague, Vaughney, has agreed to come into the Virtual Cricket Club next Wednesday. To give us a few more opinions.
Excellent.
And lots of other little revelations. So that is next Wednesday, what date is that? The 9th of June at 7 o'clock in the evening. Michael Vaughan live in the Virtual Cricket Club. You can ask him direct questions on screen, things you've always wanted to ask him. And he's going to be there for over an hour on Wednesday night in aid of the Virtual Cricket Club. And you can join us by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com. It's £6 a month to join, but we do have a live player on that stream every week. And also we post podcasts and things like that. So well worth it if you sign up to worldsbestcricketclub.com. We'd love to see you because that is a really swelling community and lots of cricket chat on the WhatsApp group that we've built around it, and people are really sort of meeting new friends and getting kind of some really good insights into cricket on this WhatsApp group as well. So Hopefully you can join us at the world's best cricket club, and we'll be back to review the last day of this match at this time tomorrow. So speak to you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.